You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
If you've listened to my podcast very long, you may have heard in the early days I was asking for topics, and I've gotten a lot of requests for specific topics, but I'm always looking for more. So if there's something that's burning for you, something that you think is of broad interest, now let me be clear, this is not how you get coaching from me about a particular situation, but if you're looking for some broad opinion about some broad topic, I would love to hear from you. You can drop me an email at podcast@savethemarriage.com. That's podcast@savethemarriage.com. And the reason I bring that up is because today I want to deal with a question that's come up from a number of people lately. And so since it seems to be on everybody's mind, I want to talk about an interesting subject, or it's kind of a flat subject, and that subject is apathy. What do you do about apathy in the middle of a relationship crisis? So what do I mean by apathy? Apathy is the appearance, the feeling, the appearance, the actions that indicate I could care less. Now, sometimes I don't really think that that's the feeling behind it, but that's often what you feel when it's coming your way. And so today I want to explore, how do you deal with that? There's one very important reason we need to talk about that, and that is because when somebody is being apathetic, when you're watching somebody and they're acting apathetic, sometimes it raises your own blood pressure, and sometimes it gets you to respond in ways you don't want to. Sometimes it makes you feel kind of helpless and hopeless. And so we want to kind of dissolve that away and talk about why you don't want to necessarily get sucked into this place of apathy. So today I want to note that there are actually two distinct places of apathy that we want to talk about. The first is your own apathy, and the second is naturally your spouse's apathy. So let's talk first about your own apathy. Let me say first that I doubt that you are truly apathetic. I doubt that there is a person listening to this that is truly apathetic. You may feel some apathy at times and some frustrations, and I'll talk about what that's really about, but I'm not really going to go into you being truly apathetic for one simple reason. If you were truly apathetic, you would not be listening to this right now. You would not be trying to figure out what to do about your relationship. I don't get many people who come to my site who spend the time listening to my podcast who really do not care. And that's the definition of apathy, is do not care about what's happening. So we can get rid of that already. And so now you may be saying, wait a minute, I feel some apathy. What is that about? Well, I believe that that apathy comes from two likely places. One is the hurt, that sometimes when we feel hurt, we guard against that. So something happens, you know, you're working hard, you're trying to get some things going with your spouse, and you feel some pushback, and that hurt leads you to kind of decide, hey, you know what, I can't do anything, I'll drop back. That's a self-preservation hurt, and it's not going to last. It tends to be fairly temporary. The other is often the case, and that is exhaustion, that you have worn yourself out to the point that you have no energy, not that you don't care, but that you have no energy. And the lack of energy is not because you don't want energy. It's because you've spent all of your energy trying to work on things already. And so you get to that place where you feel apathetic, but really it's a symptom of your exhaustion. So let me suggest that there are a couple of ways you can deal with that. One, notice that there are periods of apathy, and that those periods of apathy are the reason that you can probably say it's not necessarily truly apathy. Okay, so how do you deal with this? Well, the first thing you want to do is really invest in your own self-care. Yeah, I know, I just gave something else for you to do, but I want you to recognize, this is something I've said many times, you are the tool. You're the best tool you have to deal with the relationship crisis. You're the best thing you have. And so you want to make sure that your best tool is kept best. So the reason you're the best tool is because you're the person who your spouse fell in love with. So if you're looking for all these other tools out there, you're it. We're just going to fine tune the tool that you bring to it, the self that you bring to it. And so you want to take care of your tools. Now, I have to admit that I'm not always the best at taking care of my tools. My garage would show you lots of things that should be kept better. You know, there's a pile of tools instead of them being nicely spaced, and there's some rust on some things. And so I recognize that I'm talking to you about taking care of the tool, sometimes not having really actually done that in my own life, but recognizing that the tool you bring into the world, you, has to be cared for especially. And I want to talk about really several different ways you want to make sure you're taking care of yourself. And there are five ones that I want to just cover very quickly. First one is diet. I think people underestimate the energy level that comes out of eating well or the lack of energy that comes out of eating poorly. And when I'm talking about eating well, I'm talking about eating good foods and ones that you can pronounce and less processed foods and less carbohydrate-laden foods. Now, I'm not talking about going on a no-carb diet, but complex carbs is what you're looking for. So you want to make sure that your diet is a healthy diet that gives you plenty of veggies, good lean protein, good healthy fats, and very complex carbohydrates, no simple sugars. If it's something that's white or could be white, you can probably begin to think that's a simple sugar. And so we're talking about table sugar or even brown sugar, which could turn white, or rice or flour or white potatoes, those kinds of things that we think about pastas are included in what we call comfort foods, tend to be very simple carbohydrates that break down very quickly into sugar and create some spikes in energy and then some collapses of energy. So you want to make sure that you care for your diet. The second thing you want to do is make sure you're taking care of your exercise. More energy is lost by the lack of expressing energy in exercise than almost anything else we do. And these first three I'm talking about are the big ones. You take care of these first three things and you're 80% there. So we've got diet. Exercise means that you're getting some exercise every day, a walk. And it doesn't have to be, you know, speed walking, but to at least get 15, 20, 30 minutes of walking a day. And then several times a week, getting something where your heart rate actually gets pulled up a little more than walking. So lifting weights or doing a little sprinting or cardio. You might even look into the 7-minute workout, which is called the 7-minute workout because it takes 7 minutes. As a way of restoring your batteries, it helps recharge those batteries and make sure your batteries are getting taken care of. And then there's rest, which is really where you are restoring the batteries. You need to get 7 to 9 hours of rest. If you're getting less than that or more than that, we begin to worry about that. A lot of times when I see people who look like they are kind of dragging around apathetic, low energy, depressed, kind of the symptoms of that are really about their lack of sleep or lack of proper sleep. So you want to make sure that you've covered your diet, your exercise, and your rest. I've talked about this in other podcasts, so you can also find more information on that at Thriveology, and there's some links in the show notes about how you can get more information about that. The other place is support. You need somewhere to share. And so to find some support, that this doesn't mean somewhere that you're going to talk about how horrible things are with your relationship or even maybe even talk about your relationship at all, but somewhere that you can enjoy being in other people's presence. Friends, going out to eat is great. Going to a party or a concert or something where you're going to be around people and getting a little of that social contact that you may have lost in this process. Make sure you take care of your support needs, and that may include finding one or two people who can listen to you and listen to the pain you're going through and listen to your situation. You just don't want to have that as the basis for the support. And the last one is interests. One of the things that I notice is that people who seem to stay away from apathy, regardless of what's going on in their life, are the ones who have interests that they're pursuing. Have some passions that pull you into other places of interest. And by the way, that makes you more interesting to other people, including your spouse. So recognize that you're probably killing two birds with one stone there. Okay, so those five things are the self-care: diet, exercise, rest, support, and interests. And that doesn't mean you're adding a whole lot more onto your plate. You may be taking some things off your plate, but you definitely want to do some self-care. The other thing is a little self-compassion. recognize that sometimes we are really, really hard on ourselves when we ought to be really, really kind to ourselves and look at ourselves with some compassion and realize that you really are, and I want you to hear me say this, doing the best you can. That doesn't mean you're at your optimum. That doesn't mean that every moment of every day you're doing exactly what you think you should do. It means you're going to fail sometimes. But you know what? That doesn't mean you're not doing your best given where you are right now. So when you find yourself struggling, just to breathe in, I'm doing my best. I'm doing my best. And if you want to really make it an interesting thing, breathe in, I'm doing my best where I am as you breathe out. I'm doing my best in where I am breathing out. I'm doing my best in where I am breathing out. I'm doing my best where I am. Use that as a rhythm to pull you back and give yourself some self-compassion. You need to be good that you can't be the one doing everything. You can only do what you can do. Okay, so make sure that you give yourself some self-compassion. Okay, now what about your spouse's apathy? Because that really is where the question came from. When I was reading those questions, they weren't about, what about me, I'm apathetic? They were, what do I do with an apathetic spouse? How do I not get sucked into my apathetic spouse? How do I not get pulled into that? So let me talk about that for a little bit. And let's talk first about where that apathy comes from. Now, first thing I want you to do is if you hear yourself saying, my spouse has no right to feel that way, drop that. We've got to get to the place where we can recognize that the apathy comes from somewhere, rather, regardless of whether you think it's justified or not. Okay, so I tend to find that apathy comes from one of four areas and sometimes a combination of these areas. The first one is a biggie. It's hurt. Apathy is sometimes a way we respond to hurt by shutting off our emotions. If we've been hurt, and remember, hurt is always what's behind anger. But if we've been hurt and hurt and hurt, whether you think your spouse should feel justified in that doesn't matter. If we feel hurt and hurt and hurt, finally, we turn off that and decide not to feel. And apathy is a lack of feeling. I'm not going to feel hurt. I'm not going to feel angry. I'm not going to feel resentful. I'm not going to feel anything. I'm going to be feeling less, flat. That's apathy. So a lot of times there's a feeling of hurt that's created that place of apathy. Remember, it's not your place to decide whether they should feel hurt or not. It's to recognize that that's where it comes from. The second thing is exhaustion on their end. Sometimes it's been going on for so long that both of you are feeling exhaustion. Remember, this is a very stressful situation, and stress always zaps us of energy. It's kind of like having a battery just always constantly discharging. Eventually, that battery is going to go dead, even if it's just sitting in there doing nothing. You know, I've had a flashlight in my drawer, and I'll pull it out months later and flip it on, and there's nothing. I didn't use it, but the batteries were still getting discharged, even though it wasn't being used properly. And it's the same with a crisis. Any stress just slowly seeps out the energy, even if you're not directly doing anything. And so even a spouse can feel that exhaustion and feel that place of apathy that really is a lack of energy. Okay, the third place to see the apathy is in disconnection. One of the places that I know there is kind of an easier time of getting things moving is when there's still a lot of agitation. There's a lot of anger and arguments and fighting that's going on, because at that point, there's still a lot of connection. It's not healthy connection, but there's still a lot of connection. But as you continue down that hill of disconnection, you care less and less. And let me just say, that doesn't mean it's not recoverable. It's just that that's where the process is right now. So the further it's gone, the less connection you have, the more disconnection you have, the more the chance of being apathetic about doing something. This is often where you have somebody say, you know what, that's just too little too late. I don't care what you do. It's just too little too late. That doesn't mean that's true. In fact, I've done a podcast about too little too late, and is that really true? And so you might want to listen to that too. I've got a link to that. But you want to be focused on the fact that that disconnection is part of what leads to sometimes those feelings of apathy. Just be clear about that, that the disconnection can be there. And so you're trying to make sure you understand the reasons it might be there. And then there's one other, and that's resignation. Resignation is the other person has just given up. The disconnection is so extreme that they are resigned to the fact that this is just the way it is. Now, sometimes people hit resignation, and it's not about the fact they're going to get a divorce. They recognize that maybe they can't get a divorce, or it's not going to happen now because of kids or property or lots of other things, but they've resigned themselves that this is just the way it is. So, and those are very closely aligned. The disconnection is the relational part. The level of resignation is the internal individual part. So we have now four places where that apathy can be coming from: the hurt, the exhaustion, the disconnection, and the resignation. Which leads us to, so what do you do about it? Is it a lost cause? It absolutely is not a lost cause, but it is a little bit harder than when there is that activity. Just recognize that it just means there's a little harder to get to that place where you're on the tipping point. Okay, so how do you deal with that? Let me suggest seven steps or seven ways, seven places to begin to dig into this process. Now, the first one is a biggie. And the first one is an apology letter. And the apology letter is actually going to tie into the second one. So let me tell you, the second one is build empathy. Okay, so apology letter. I believe that apology letters are incredibly important at the beginning of the process. And part of the reason they're important is because of what it does for you as you're writing that apology letter. And it's secondarily for what could happen to the other person. But the shift that begins to happen is internal. And a lot of people think that when I talk about these apology letters, it's just this little technique. And so a lot of times people say, oh, well, just give me a template. Give me the place where I can just write in my stuff and you give me the good words to say, and I'll write in a couple of things and I'll sign it and I'm good to go. That's not what I'm aiming for. When I'm talking about an apology letter, I'm talking about you sitting down and making yourself fully responsible and accountable for your part in where things are. Not for where everything is, but for your part in where things are. So it's about accountability, to be able to say, wow, you know what? I realize that I have done some hurtful things. I realize that I have participated in this disconnecting process, and I am so sorry for it. It also can begin to create a shift in the other person because they're suddenly seeing something that they may not have experienced before. If they have that disconnection and resignation, they may go, wait, maybe there's more to this than I thought. Now, the apology letter is simply you being able to say, here's what I did. You can even start by thanking the other person for bringing these issues to the front, and then taking in accountability. If you really want some help with this, this is something I do offer to VIP members. I have a full training. And the reason I do it in the VIP program is because that's designed for me to have a feedback loop with you. So as you're going through that, you can ask questions and clarify and get some knowledge about that. But if you don't want that, if you're on a good place and you're just needing a starting point, apology letter. That's the starting point for this process. So step number two, I've already said, is empathy. Empathy is about standing in the other person's shoes, not agreeing with where the other person is standing, but standing in their shoes. So you might notice that this is helpful in helping you avoid being angry. If you become aware of why they may be feeling the way they're feeling and why they may be seeing things the way they're seeing, then you can begin to understand where the apathy is coming from. And instead of being resistant to it and trying to turn it around, you understand why it's there. Understanding, accepting where things are is the beginning point of moving forward. And so you want to make sure you get to that place where you're understanding their viewpoint, not agreeing with their viewpoint. I want to be very clear about that, that when you're building empathy, you don't have to agree with the way they see the world. You just have to make sure you understand how they see the world. You stand in their shoes. You don't agree with where they're standing. So build empathy with what's going on with the spouse. That helps in so many ways, but it certainly helps you not react to the apathy, to not get pulled into that apathy and not get reactive with the apathy, which is our tendency. When somebody's apathetic, we tend to kind of want to stir it up a little bit. And I'll talk about that in just a minute. So number three, go with the three C's. Remember the three C's of calm, constant, consistent. Calm is very important. So let me go ahead and throw in number four. Do not seek to provoke. And I'll come back to number three. Do not seek to provoke. One of the things that is the human tendency, I think, is to kind of stir the hornet's nest, especially when the hornets are sleeping. And so sometimes when there's an apathy, you know, you can't get a response, you begin to kind of ramp up your own emotional response, trying to make them respond in some way. It's kind of like if you could just get back to even that angry place, it would be better than what you're seeing, but not the case. When you're trying to get to an angry response instead of the apathetic response, you're not getting to a better place. You're just creating another place of exhaustion and another place of disconnection and another place where the spouse says, see, this is what I'm talking about. I just need some space. I just need some distance, and you're just all in my face. So number four, do not seek to provoke, which leads us to number three. So be calm, constant, consistent. Calm doesn't mean that you're always at a calm flat line. In other words, you don't want to use the calm as a way of kind of looking apathetic. Calm just means that you're not reacting, that you're choosing your responses, and that you're actually trying to deal with your anxiety, finding ways to deal with that anxiety and focusing on how to lessen the anxiety. Got a link for another podcast that will help you do that in the show notes. So make sure you're listening to those pieces that will help you pull all this together. Okay, so constant, consistent, very quickly, and there's a link to what that means, the three C's, how I go through them a little more fully, but calm is the first one, constant, consistent. Constant means that you are really trying to do this on a regular basis, that your plan of connection, and a plan is very important, you need a plan, so make sure that you focus on building that plan, and I mean a written down plan. And which is also, I do provide a fill in the blank for VIP members of the Save the Marriage program. And that again is because we've got a feedback loop, but you don't have to have that. You can create your own plan one step at a time. Just write down what it's going to be and what it's going to look like. And that includes your constancy. So maybe you're sending one way texts. Well, one way text, you might decide you're going to send 2 to 3 times per week. That's the constant, not I'm going to send one today and, 3 weeks later, I realize I haven't done anything else, so I'll do that. So constant means that on a regular basis, you're following through on your plan on how you're going to do it. And then consistent means you're going to do it the same way. You're not going to change midstream. I've also got some podcasts out there about bad advice, like no contact. And so, or maybe even reverse psychology. And here's why I have those. A lot of times people will start down a trail and they'll have their plan and then they'll read something that says, oh, do this and it'll work magic on your spouse. But it's completely opposite, or at least a close to opposite direction than what they were doing. And so instead of going, wait, this doesn't make sense in the plan I've got, they just pull it out and do that next piece because somebody said this is a really good idea. And then they are incredibly inconsistent. And when you're inconsistent, you create confusion for your spouse, only proving to your spouse that things are crazy and this is why your spouse is getting out. So you definitely want to make sure that you follow those three C's of calm, constant, consistent while you're dealing with the empathy. Okay, so we've already hit number four, do not seek to provoke. Leave the sleeping dog alone, right? And don't worry about trying to get back to that angry stage. You're not going to get back to that stage. We can go another way of getting to connection without trying to backtrack into a bad place of connection. So then number five is look at the love languages. I love the concept of love languages. This is one of the reasons that I had that interview with Gary Chapman. The reason that I picked Gary is because his love language idea is what I call simply elegant. It's very easy to grasp and it's very easy to follow. When you recognize that both of you probably have missed each other's languages and that's why you're feeling unloved, then you can begin to work to what Gary calls filling the love tank. I love that idea of an empty tank. Doesn't that sound like what happens when somebody goes apathetic? Their whole love tank is just empty. And so there's no energy there. And so when you attend to the love languages, you're putting back into the love tank. And let me remind you, as Gary and I were talking, we talked about this 6-month experiment. I've actually got instructions on my blog. If you go to the interview with Gary, you'll see that I've got a nice little way that you can follow that experiment. So grab that resource if you haven't already and make sure you're following the love experiment, the love language experiment. It's a 6-month period where you're not going to be so worried about the fact that your language is not being spoken because you're focused on your spouse's love language. So attend to the love languages. And I'm not going to go into all the love languages. You can go to listen to the interview and we talk about that. Grab his material, take his test, and you'll be on time. Okay. Number 6 is attend to time and space. Realize that getting past apathy can take some time and you've got to attend to the space issues. So make sure that you follow. And when I'm talking about space, I'm not talking about no contact. What I'm talking about is actually creating an emotional space where both of you can exist in it. So emotional space is one of those places where people really misunderstand. They end up pursuing, and then when they hear the person say, I need some space, instead of figuring out how to be different in that relationship, they stop. That's not what I need some space means. This is one of those other areas I've really taken on in some advanced training about how to follow that and deal with that emotional space and understand how you're into that emotional space. So recognize that it takes some time and some emotional space in order to get past that apathy place. And the last thing is remember patience and persistence. Those two words are probably the mantra of moving through the apathetic situation, patience and persistence. Patience covers that time element and it keeps you from getting angry and it keeps you from getting frustrated and it keeps you recognizing that you've got to stay on your path. And persistent means you're going to keep trying. In fact, patience and persistence is pretty much the same as that time and space. I'm saying it two different ways. Patience is moving through that time carefully. And then space, as you move through that space, you have to do it with some persistence and some connection with that process. And so now that I've promised that those are the only 7 pieces I'm going to give to you, let me give you one more piece. And that is, when you're dealing with apathy, don't read tea leaves. This is an important one. Don't read the tea leaves. And it's one of those that I talk about all the time, but don't read the tea leaves, which means that you're not going to try to figure out what something means. You can figure out, you can look at the reasons why your spouse is feeling apathetic. That's not what I'm talking about. But I'm talking about when you're watching your spouse and maybe you see your spouse come a little bit out of the apathy. And so you go, oh, we're all okay. That's reading tea leaves. Or you see your spouse get angry and you go, oh, now we're back to that. That's reading tea leaves. Or you see your spouse stay in apathy and you go, oh, this is hopeless. There's nothing that's going to happen. Don't read the tea leaves. You can begin to figure out why your spouse is feeling or how your spouse is feeling that apathy without trying to figure out what their next actions are. So don't be trying to read the tea leaves on what their reactions mean. Just keep moving through your process. Take care of yourself, do that self-care, and then follow those 7 pieces to make sure that you're continuing your process in a very coherent way. And I think what you many times will find is that apathy begins to dissolve into deeper levels of connection and warmth, which really is what we're going for. And this is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.